Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The FT.
Hello and welcome to World Weekly. I'm Sean Donnan, the FT's World News Editor. This week, France rejected Nicolas Sarkozy, and austerity and Greek voters took their turn at venting their anger and railing against what the leader of the far left, Alexis Tsipras, called a barbarous bailout, declaring it null and void. We've had Mario Draghi in recent weeks tell Eurozone leaders that they needed to start looking for ways to spur growth in their countries. The growth versus austerity debate has been the big one in Europe over the past few weeks. So are we beginning to see the shift away from austerity and towards growth? And is growth around the corner? And are we going to emerge from this European recession? Joining me in the studio is Chris Giles, the FT's economics editor, and Ben Hall, our Europe news editor. On the line from Frankfurt is Ralph Atkins, who is our European economics editor. And in Paris, we have Hugh Carnegie, who is our Paris bureau chief. Let's start with you, Hugh. What does François Hollande want?
Well, essentially what he wanted to do politically was to show that he was going to be able to shift the debate in Europe away from the emphasis on austerity. Although there hasn't been a lot of austerity in France, it's very unpopular, proved unpopular during the election campaign, towards growth. Specifically what he's looking for, and he's already prepared a memo to send to all his European partners when he takes power next week, are essentially four things initially. One is that there be some European project bonds to invest in things like new energy technology. He wants an increase in the capital of the European Investment Bank in order to make available more funds for investing in infrastructure projects. He wants better use and more dispersing of the European Union structural funds. And he wants a financial transaction tax imposed by as many European countries as he can muster to raise other funds for development. He has also been talking about reorienting the European Central Bank towards policies that are more growth-friendly. That's even more controversial than the other things he's been suggesting, which his European partners will probably be able to accommodate.
Well, let's build on that controversy. Ralph, how is all that being viewed in Frankfurt at the ECB?
Well, I think there's a lot of what Hollande has asked for that is acceptable within Germany. I mean, I think the additional measures on the EIB and so on are relatively uncontroversial. I think what he says on the ECB is really crossing red lines, however, though, in Germany. When I say Germany, I mean in Berlin, within the government, but also within the ECB itself.
What are those red lines, Ralph?
Well, I think the idea that we've heard during the French election campaign that the ECB, for instance, should be buying government bonds on a large scale is seen with horror here in Germany. I mean, the Bundesbank would just not accept that. They would be see that as monetary financing, i.e. central banks basically underwriting governments, which they say, and it is indeed forbidden under EU law. So I think those sorts of things are seen as big no-nos. I mean, I think, and also the idea that the ECB could somehow be more tuned towards growth in its monetary policy stance. I mean, I think that's sort of seen a bit cynically here. I mean, what difference is a quarter percentage point interest rate cut going to make in these circumstances? No one can, as Mr. Mario Draghi, the ECB president, said last week, no one can say there is any lack of liquidity in aggregate, at least within the Eurozone. So I think there's a lot of skepticism on those points. I think, though, what I was going to go on to say, though, was that I think the ECB certainly feels as though they've been here before with France. We had similar noises when Sarkozy was first elected. I think in a funny way, maybe Hollande is seen as a more level-headed, if you like, politician that maybe will be easier to deal with, actually, and to come to some sensible compromises. The other feeling within, more in Berlin, certainly, is that they're slight sort of taken aback with the suggestion that Germany is somehow against growth. I mean, Germany would always say that, of course, they see growth as important. It's how you achieve that. That's where the difference lies.
Ben, how we've heard from the ECB, how are the other politicians, if you will, the other leaders in Europe going to greet Hollande?
Well, I think
François Hollande has helped sort of flush out concern in other countries. Mario Monti, the Italian prime minister, was arguably talking about the need to do more to support growth well before François Hollande, but he's given him some leeway to come out and join the debate. And I think in other countries as well, there's clearly a desire to give some more space to growth. But the trouble is, it's not even particularly clear-cut whether all other countries necessarily want to let up on austerity. I mean, particularly in Spain, where there is clearly a debate going on inside the Rajoy government about whether they do want, for example, to delay their reduction of their deficit to 3% to give them a bit more time and to have a little bit more leeway for growth.
But we've clearly seen in this election in France and also in the election in Greece and in some of the noises we're hearing from other parts of the Union, a clear sort of popular backlash against austerity. We're seeing it in Ireland to a certain extent. I mean, how does this play over the long, hot summer ahead?
Well, if the Eurozone can reach some kind of grand deal and come up with a growth compact quickly that involves some of the measures that Hugh mentioned that Hollande has put forward and that the Germans are willing to accept, that will help at least give the impression that the Eurozone is moving towards doing more to support growth. Will it actually make a fundamental difference to the economic situation in the Eurozone in the short to medium term? I doubt very much, but it might ease the politics just a little bit.
Let's look at that fundamental difference question. Chris, does a growth compact get us growth in Europe?
Well, I think the whole point of the whole difficulty with the whole growth and austerity debate is that growth is not a policy, it's an aspiration. And just to say that we're going to have growth is a rather nice aspiration to have, but you have to find the policies that generate it. I think there is some leeway for easing up on the speed of deficit reduction. We heard this week from Christine Lagarde, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, who suggested that when things go wrong, you shouldn't change your fiscal measures. You should keep those in place and just allow borrowing to be a little bit worse. So that would certainly help Spain or France or Italy, as in the current recession. And she said the average rate of deficit reduction in circumstances like this should be about 1% of national income a year. The Eurozone is going for about 1.5%. So clearly there is a sort of green light for the Eurozone as a whole. That doesn't mean every country within the Eurozone, to ease up on the austerity a little bit, which might help a little bit with growth. But let's not suggest that we're suddenly going to find a boom times coming around in Europe because we're going to have a massive fiscal stimulus.
But François Hollande and the conversation in Europe now, a lot of it is focused around this idea of infrastructure, great infrastructure projects, great Keynesian projects, and so on. Is that going to get us growth quickly?
No, because infrastructure projects tend to be rather slow to implement, even though they are rather good at keeping the money internal to the economy. So if you had, in the phrase, shovel-ready infrastructure projects you could suddenly kickstart, then it would generate growth almost certainly, at least in the short term, while you're doing them. But that is quite unlikely, and I don't think there is a backlog of really truly shovel-ready projects around.
Is there anything else that we should be considering?
Well, I think in the end, we know roughly, well, most economists know what they think is the best solution to the Eurozone problem, which is a long, slow grind of internal revaluation in the core countries, in particular Germany. And we saw actually Wolfgang Schäuble this week saying that he wouldn't mind seeing German wages rising faster than previously and certainly faster than other countries. And that is really quite a big change from Germany. We aren't seeing austerity in Germany. Germany's done all its austerity yet. They're not planning any more deficit reduction. So we are sort of seeing the right policies. It is slow, it is hard work, and whether it is too slow to be acceptable to the public of the Eurozone countries is the big question.
Ralph?
What Chris hasn't mentioned, of course, is the labour market. And I think the perception here in Frankfurt and in Berlin is when you look at countries like Spain and so on, I mean, they've had EU-funded infrastructure spending for decades. What they need now is the labour market reforms that will really make a difference, particularly for solving youth unemployment. But I think that, again, the danger with those is they obviously take a lot of time to push through. But I think the German position tends to get painted as too, as I say, they're not anti-growth, that they are supporting the idea of stronger wages. They do see that productivity developments and reform in the past in Germany does justify higher wages now. And also the Bundesbank is accepting the idea now that actually inflation in Germany will have to be higher than in the rest of the Eurozone as part of a sort of a natural readjustment process.
Let's go to you, Hugh. Typically, politicians, as they run for election, dial up the rhetoric the moment they take power, and they have that responsibility, they dial back on the rhetoric. Are we going to see that from Hollande in the weeks to come?
Well, I think it's worth mentioning that one thing Hollande has not actually in any way explicitly asked for is any kind of delay in the consolidation of France's public finances. In fact, he's been very clear that he's committed to bringing France's budget deficit down to the magic 3% mark next year, which is quite a big task. And I think that's partly because, first of all, he knows that he will only be successful as a president if he gets on top of France's debt. The other reason is that he knows that he won't get anything out of Angela Merkel particularly and the ECB if he's seen to be letting up on France's determination to sort its own public finances out. Ralph makes a very good point about the labour market issue, because one of the interesting things I think which I think we shouldn't lose sight of in this great debate about growth and reform is that while Hollande has been at the forefront of those calling for growth-oriented policies, back home, he's by no means committed to radical restructuring of France's quite rigid labour market, for example, which many private sector economists and many businesses in France have been calling for some time.
He is, in fact, an advocate of the 35-hour work week.
Well, he's certainly not planning to overturn the 35-hour work week. I don't think you'll hear too much rhetoric in its favour from him, but he certainly has a constituency on the left in France which is very devoted to it, and so you won't see him unravelling that anytime soon. So I think one thing that we will be looking at very closely in France as he gets his feet under the desk is whether he is going to be committed to any kind of what the ECB, what Mario Monti, what Angela Merkel and others, particularly on the right of center in Europe, would regard as the vital structural reforms that will get a big economy like France moving a little bit more jauntily.
Now, the big piece of the puzzle that we haven't mentioned here today is Greece and the political mess there. It now looks like after last Sunday's elections, all of the parties are going to struggle to form a government. Looks like we're headed for a new election, possibly June 17th, and no one knows what that will give us. What happens if we go back into a Greek crisis mode, Chris, and we look at a possible exit of Greece from the Eurozone?
We don't know. We know that it could be extremely nasty if the Greek exit just raises the question in many other peripheral countries, who's next? And the answer can't be quashed quickly. Then we have quite possibly the unravelling of the Eurozone, because if you get very, very serious contagion and you get bank runs of the nature that people think, well, if Greece has exited, why on earth hold any money in a Portuguese, an Italian, a Spanish or an Irish bank, and that all the money flows straight away to German banks because an Irish or Portuguese euro isn't seen to be the same as a German euro, then you have a very, very difficult situation almost immediately. If you can quash that speculation and say, Greece is a special case, and this is what exactly what the authorities will do. They'll say, there is no way that anyone else will go down that route, and people believe them, then it's manageable.
Ralph, how are things looking in Frankfurt when it comes to this?
Well, I think Greek exit is really the horror scenario in even the best of circumstances. I think there's a lot of high-stakes pressure being put on Greece to come up with some sort of viable coalition, but I think everyone here is as unsure as in the rest of Europe, really.
The Greek issue is going to be the real test of this so-called growth versus austerity debate. What can the Eurozone offer Greece in terms of measures to encourage growth in Greece in order to get Greek popular acceptance of the bailout? Or do they force Greece even to the brink of exit for the sake of getting Greece to observe austerity and fiscal discipline, all the measures that are needed under its bailout? That's really going to be the test of this whole debate over the next few months.
All of which tells us that we've got a long, hot summer ahead, although perhaps not here in London, over the next few months as we watch events in Greece. Hugh Carnegie in Paris, Ralph Atkins in Frankfurt, Chris Giles and Ben Hall here in the studio in London. Thank you very much. And that's it for World Weekly this week. World Weekly is produced by Martin Staba. I'm Sean Donnan. Till next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.